Hi, I'm Rob Pritchard and I'm the sports editor at Manx Radio. The 2025 Isle of Man TT races are imminent and once again, clerk of the TT course Gary Thompson remains at the forefront of making sure the racing fortnight runs as smoothly and safely as possible. He's now entering his 13th year overseeing the meeting and looking after all matters relating to the Snaefell Mountain course. With a great weight on he and his team's shoulders to keep TT running, sometimes Mr. Thompson has come in for scrutiny and sometimes criticism for decisions made on the event, particularly when there's disruption to the qualifying and race schedule as well as road closures. And with a host of racing and non-racing changes coming in for 2025, I recently spoke with Mr. Thompson to discuss in detail the running of the event, his relationship with riders, volunteers, visitors and residents, and what he makes of being in the spotlight for the calls he makes in such an important role. Preparations for this year's event all started, well, best part of just under 12 months ago when TT 2024 ended. Just how many different tasks have you and your team had to overcome in the last year to get things ready for this year?
Well, yeah, you're right. The plan for TT 2025 literally started a week or so after we finished TT 2024. Obviously, bearing in mind that I've got to also put in place the any changes to the risk assessment, the event safety plans, and any documentation ready for the Manx Grand Prix in August. But planning for the TT does start pretty much straight after the TT the previous year before. And this year we've done some resurfacing there. So Glen Helen was the major focus during TT last year, given the wet weather we had. So Glen Helen has now been resurfaced. And I live in Lincolnshire, so I've not been to the island for a while, but I don't think there's been much rain so to test whether Glen Helen's worked or not. But we have it on good authority from the DOI that it's been very successful, so we don't envisage any issues with Glen Helen. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had to resurface the right-hand carriage on the approach to Brandywell, because some resin was dropped from distance of about 70 metres. But again, the DOI have been brilliant. We've got a really good relationship with the DOI, been brilliant, and they got that resurfaced straight away. And with, on average, about 2,800 vehicle passes daily, we're pretty confident that we're bedded in well for the first practice on the 26th of May.
Just on the resurfacing side of things, you mentioned what happened with the resin on that section of the mountain road. We've also seen resurfacing taking place at Quarterbridge, for example. The DOI carries out that work, but no doubt you and your team will have, a big contribution as to what goes on there. So given the fact that the mountain road situation was a little bit different because of a spill, effectively, how much, if in any way, did that disrupt getting those preparations across the TT course done?
Not really. I mean, obviously, John Barton, John Barton, 33 years as a competitor, very, very experienced. He's now the one of two deputy clerks of the course, along with Lizzie Kinvig. And John is also the course inspection officer. So he works very, very close with the DOI. Obviously, his experience as a competitor comes well into play in that role. And as I say, we've got a fantastic relationship with the DOI. John works very closely with the with Gary Saunders in Highways, and they always liaise with us when any resurfacing is being done, so we can look at it from a racing point of view. But the relationship with the DOI is excellent.
On the racing side of things, looking to last year, the weather certainly played its part in disrupting things on a few occasions. My mind particularly goes back to the final day where a lot of races had to be crammed in. We had to lose some races and some were reduced, and that drew a bit of criticism at times from some fans once more. So what, I suppose, would you say to those who were sceptical and or critical of the way races panned out last year around the conditions and circumstances?
Yeah, I can appreciate the fans do get frustrated, but for me, the biggest point is safety. And obviously, the Friday of last year's, we lost Friday in its entirety because of weather. So we had to move the programme onto the Saturday. And then we had that supercar, I think it was a Lotus or something, that had the RTA on the mountain, which obviously put a delay into the programme. So everything got backed up, and on the other side, the sponsors of the various races, obviously they want to see their races take place. And, you know, there's only so many races we can fit into a day. And also bearing in mind the amount of laps that competitors do. So, yes, we got all the races in, but also we had to reduce laps as well, because, you know, we've got to think about rider safety, rider fatigue. So it wasn't the ideal end to the TT, but, you know, given the circumstances, given the weather, and given, you know, our responsibility to safety and the rider safety, you know, we did what we could, and we achieved the outcome, although not satisfactory, you know, for some not satisfactory, but we got the event in, given what we had to deal with.
And alongside that, again, with the schedule coming into another year, the third year of this expanded programme, whilst there are those who will argue, yes, there's potentially more racing for the likes of spectators and more for the competitors to get stuck into, how much does it affect the leeway you and your team have to move things around if there are delays?
I've heard people say that, you know, that it's too packed and everything, but if you look at the programme, so at the end of, obviously, what we've done, we've shifted the programme one day to the right. So in previous years when it started, I remember when I first started this job as clerk of the course, first practice was on a Saturday evening, and that would be for Super Sport, Super Twins and Sidecars. We then moved to Sunday afternoon, where we had everything out, including big bikes. But all we've done now really is move the schedule one day to the right. And, you know, for anybody who's on the island on bank holiday, late May bank holiday Monday, obviously this year, 26th of May, they've got a feast of motorbike practice and qualifying, really. We've got FP1, first practice in the morning, a quick break for lunch, and then qualifying one in the afternoon. So, and then we go into the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday evening practice, Q2, 3 and Q4. Final qualifying on Friday afternoon, which is, we always have it in the Friday afternoon to give teams more time to prepare for Saturday racing. And then when we get to race week, we've got Monday contingency day, Thursday contingency day and the Sunday. So, you know, the programme is fairly flexible, and I'm fairly comfortable with the time we've got to fit the programme in. Obviously, we need the weather, but you know, as was demonstrated in 2019, when we had five races in a day, we virtually packed TT 219 into a day, and I'm not for one moment suggesting we do that going forward, but, you know, I think we did demonstrate that, you know, once we've got the weather in place, you know, we have got time to do that. And that's not ideal by any stretch, but we do what we can to get the programme in. And I hear what people say about the schedule moving to the senior race day, moving to the Saturday. But, you know, it's in terms of contingencies, we haven't lost anything. We've still got the same contingencies as we've had in the past.
On a slightly different note, but on the subject of the schedule for the competitors, really, given the advances we've seen in the last several years, especially with the likes of sports science as well, and the, you know, the physical and mental toll taking part in the TT can have on these riders, no matter how high a level they're competing at, how much does that factor in these days into how much these riders are allowed to do from your perspective?
It does. I mean, we've worked very closely with Dr. Gareth Davis and the MRMS team, and they have put in a pre-event medical for all riders. So all riders will go through a pre-event medical to ensure that they are fit to race down Bray Hill on Bank Holiday Monday. So Gareth and his team have done a lot of work on that. But we have reduced, again, going back to when I first started, there were races and there were practice sessions in between races and practice sessions at the end of the day. And back in the day, you know, riders were doing probably nine or 10 laps. So what we've done now is we've reduced the laps in some races. So Superstock and Super Twin have been reduced to 3 laps. And what we've done this year, we've changed the schedule slightly. So in the past, we used to, every race day used to start with a warm-up lap. So what we've done now is will be called the course inspection lap. And that will only be invoked if conditions are not considered to be good enough to start racing straight away. So let me put that in a better way. If conditions are good enough in the morning for racing to commence straight away, the race program will start with a race, and so every day we'll have two races, and then a one lap practice session at the end of each day for the competitors to prepare for the following day's racing. So for example, on Saturday we've got the Super Sport and Sidecars. There is no lap after that because obviously they've had all week to qualify. On the Sunday, the Superbike six lap race, there's no laps after that because of time constraints and getting the roads open. But then the Tuesday and the Wednesday, we've got the Superstock and the Super Twin races. Superstock, Super Twin on the Tuesday, Super Sport 2 and Sidecar on the Wednesday. For the solos, that's seven laps on the Tuesday. And if conditions are good enough to start racing, then they will do one lap after that, if they so wish, to prepare for the racing on Wednesday. And that's the same for the Friday. So what we've done is we've tried to reduce the program, still have the content there for the spectators, and I think nobody can argue the content is excellent, very good content for the spectators. But we are mindful of how many laps riders are doing as well.
Just on the subject, like you've just covered there about the change of the warm-up lap, now course called the course inspection lap. Like you say, it's to find out if conditions aren't 100% or close to 100%. What the course is looking like. But for riders who were using the likes of the warm-up laps to get important data acquisition on their machines as well, what options are there for riders to take machines out potentially to check that they're all set up correctly for a qualifying or a race session?
Well, there won't be that. I mean, all that's done in qualifying week. As I say, if conditions are good enough for racing to commence, that will start that'll be the first race of the day. So we'll close the roads, go straight into a race. And then there will always be a one lap session at the end of each day for riders to prepare the bikes for the next day. The sidecar shakedown lap, which that will take place on the Tuesday in between the Superstock and the Super Twin races, ready for, so they can set up their sidecar outfits for the Wednesday race. But they've had all week to qualify and prepare the bikes. Obviously they'll be racing on this Saturday and the Sunday. We're fairly sure that with these one lap sessions at the end of each race day, provided conditions are good enough for racing to commence from the start, they'll have plenty of opportunity to set the bikes up ready for the forthcoming races during the week.
And just before I move on, again, coming back to this course inspection lap as well, with, again, obviously safety the priority, as you always mention, but for riders to be going out there on laps like that when you know that the course may not be ideal, where does, I suppose, the safety protocol come into that and how the course inspection lap works?
Well, I think we demonstrated that last year, really. If you remember last year on the Tuesday evening, that we had to, because of a delay in the program, we moved the Super Twin race to the evening, and I think we'd had a shower or something late on in the afternoon, and obviously it was fairly breezy as well. So obviously we did the course inspection laps and everything, we set the guys off, the competitors off on a warm-up lap before the Super Twin race. And they came back in and they said they didn't think it was suitable for racing to continue. So we listened to what the riders say. I mean, I've always listened to what the riders say. Obviously, they're the ones out there doing the racing. They're the ones who are carrying the risk. So I will always listen to what they say. And as a consequence of them coming back in and saying it wasn't suitable, we knocked the Super Twin race on the head. So this course inspection lap during race week, we will, obviously, if it's we've got experienced guys who inspect the course anyway. We've got, as I say, we've got John Barton, the deputy clerk of the course. We've got eight travelling marshals who are all experienced ex-competitors. So if they say it's not suitable, we'll always put delays in to delay the program, to lay the schedule to when it is suitable. But if it's, you know, slightly damp in areas, or it's probably more windy or slightly breezy than what we'd like, we put the course inspection lap in place. And if the competitors come back and said, you know, not sure it's right at the moment, then I listen to them as I've done in the past, and we'll delay the racing until it is. You know, I would never put competitors out in conditions where they're not happy, you know, where there is the risk of an incident taking place. We don't want to increase the risk of a possible incident taking place, so we do listen very carefully to what they say.
And when you do have to alter the schedule every so often, as can happen, whether it's weather or other circumstances, what would you say to the idea that some classes sometimes maybe feel like they're lower in the pecking order than some? For example, in the regular schedule, we often see the likes of the sidecars going out as one of the last. Not just them, but in the classes in general, what would you say to those who maybe feel they get a bit less time out on track than others when things get moved around?
That's probably, I mean, we obviously try to give all the competitors as much time on the course as we possibly can. I mean, sidecars, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I hear what people say. Sidecars probably don't get as much track time as solos. But on that, you know, the majority of the solos have, you know, 3-4 bikes to set up, whereas the sidecars have one outfit. So, you know, there is only two sidecar races, you know, one class, two sidecar races. So they have to set up one outfit, whereas the solo competitors have, as I say, probably 3 or 4 bikes to set up. So, you know, we do try and give everybody maximise it as much as we can. And the sidecar, you know, I've had it before where people say, oh, the sidecars have dipped out, you're not giving the sidecars enough time. But in the past, we have actually switched the programme round to put the sidecars out first to ensure they get as much time out there as we possibly can, given the, you know, the conditions that have prevailed and the time left, so that they've got enough time to get the bike set up for the racing. So, yeah, I hear what people say. It is what it is on that. But, you know, we would never start any race unless we were sure that every competitor had the opportunity to set the bike up accordingly.
I'll come back to sidecars in a moment, but just coming back to the regulation side of things with the solos, I saw that one of the changes is that you won't be able to now ride a solo machine for the first time during a practice or a qualifying session. You'll have had to have had some sort of prior experience on it, so they can be tested at somewhere like Jerby Airfield and then used on the mountain course as well. How are you advising potentially, or how are the motorsport teams advising teams to kind of approach that if they haven't had time to go out but don't want to turn up at the TT and get turned away on the mountain course to have to jump through hoops again at Jerby to come back, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that, as you say, that's been highlighted in the regulations. We're sending out regular updates to competitors to remind them, and you know, there is a session at Jerby on the weekend or prior to first practice, but they are all well aware that if potentially the first time they are going to ride their bike is down Bray Hill, that used to happen in the past, but that is no longer the case. You know, that is a we've had experience of that happening in the past and how that's turned out. And so moving forward, there'll be no competitor riding his bike for the first time down Bray Hill without previously ridden the bike before. You know, and we are through the registration process. You know, they have to prove to the race organisers that they've ridden that bike, and if they haven't, then they need to get themselves down to Jerby to ride that bike before first practice. Otherwise, quite simple, they won't be going out.
And turning back to the sidecars, one big thing I noticed in the regulations this year is that there is a ban on 7-speed gearboxes. What's the purpose behind that?
So what we've done is, you know, there is a gulf now in the sidecar class, and I think we're all aware that, you know, Ben Birchall, Ryan Crowe, and Pete Fownes, you know, they are 4 or 5 seconds faster than the rest of the field. So, but that aside, you know, we've become acutely aware that, you know, for some teams, and to be honest, it was Tim Reeves. Tim Reeves approached me last year and said for him to put a sidecar outfit on the TT course and be competitive, it would have cost him at least £110,000, £120,000. Now, you know, that's ridiculous money. So what we're doing this year, you know, obviously, you know, the likes of Ben, Ryan, and Pete, they would have invested already in 7-speed gearboxes and, you know, to run the outfits as they are. So we brought in the stock engine rule. So there will be one sidecar result, one podium, but those outfits or those teams that are running the stock engine rule, there will be a separate an award for the fastest stock engine outfit, if for want of a better term, and that will be presented to the fastest stock engine outfit at the presentations night. And then moving forward, we just need to look as to where the sidecar class is going. But you know, for a competitor, for a team to have to spend £110,000-£120,000 to put an outfit on the line, is that's pretty steep. So what we're doing is we're trying to make it more affordable and more importantly, get more outfits on the line for the sidecar class. Because again, when I first started, we had probably 45-50 outfits starting the race. We're now down to 32, so we need to do what we can to help the sidecars and build that class back up to where it was.
And just finally, on the sidecar side of things, the running order has been changed slightly, so actual start place on the road will be dictated by qualifying times rather than seeds. For example, there are no seeded riders this year. Is this all part of levelling the playing field a bit, or are there other reasons behind that?
It is part of levelling the playing field, but you know, we spoke to some of the sidecar teams, and you know, none of them particularly wanted to go at number one and all this sort of thing. So what we decided was, we said, right, okay, for TT 2025, there'll be no seeded numbers for sidecars, and they'll all start the race in by the fastest time. Whoever's posted the fastest time will go off at number one. You know, they'll and that's it, mate, basically. There's no more science behind it than that. Fastest will go first, second fastest second, so on and so forth throughout the field. But it was, you know, I can understand where they're coming from. You know, they're all fast lads, and nobody wanted to really go off at number one and all this sort of thing. So the simple thing was just to start them off in qualifying order.
On a different note then, both solos and sidecars, riders and teams in general, really, obviously they are in control of their own finances and so on. They sort all that. But when you get feedback like that, like you mentioned from Tim Reeves there on the cost of getting involved, how much more are you hearing about the expenses that riders and teams are facing, given that we're in a world where cost of living is continuing to rise in some areas?
Well, that's right. It's motorbike racing across all the various championships, both at MotoGP, World, and National at BSB, etc., etc. Everything is vastly expensive, and we are doing what we can to try and reduce that cost. But obviously, we are working with all the championships as well. So we are, where we possibly can, or as much as we can, aligning our rules to BSB. So those that compete at BSB, you know, they don't have to do any changes to the bike to bring it to the TT. So what we're very careful to avoid is them spending excessive amounts just to race at the TT. So we do work very closely with BSB to make sure that our rules align with them. And equally, the Northwest 200 organisers work closely with us to make sure that their technical rules align to ours as well. So across the board, we're doing what we can to reduce the costs for those wishing to compete.
Again, on the financial side, it's been a hot topic, particularly away from the TT and in some other areas over the last couple of years. Insurance around road racing as well. So what is the Alaman TT races status, and indeed the Manx Grand Prix status as well, with regards to that this year and going forward, as you understand it?
Well, I work at the ACU, so I'm aware of the overall insurance costs for motorcycle sport across all disciplines. The insurance costs for the Ironman TT races, the Manx Grand Prix, Classic TT, and indeed the pre-TT Classic and the Southern 100 is kind of ring fenced within the ACU insurance program, and there is a premium which is then awarded to the races on the island, which is then divided between those events I've just mentioned, based on claims history and all the stuff that goes into an insurance program. But again, you know, it is costly. I mean, I know for a fact, having worked closely with our insurance providers, the insurance premiums have hardened everywhere, and obviously motorcycle sport and indeed motorsport in general, their costs have increased as other things across everywhere else. So, you know, we can only do what we do, but fortunately, you know, unlike other areas where events have been lost, you know, we've got programs in place, and we work very closely with the Isle of Man government to ensure that, you know, the TT races and our events on the island are not subject to not put at risk, basically.
We've spoken about plenty with regards to the racing and all sorts, but in and amongst all of that is the Isle of Man residence for those 2 weeks as well. Life goes on outside of the Isle of Man TT as well. So with all that we've talked about with the schedule and what it can entail, some residents are still not fans of the TT or motorsport in general. So how much do you have to work as a team to try and keep keep other residents on side as well, to make sure that they're not inconvenienced to a point that goes, you know, beyond their interests?
Yeah, I completely get that. I completely understand where they're coming from. But I mean, there's a couple of things on that. I mean, since I've been clerk of the course, I've always made the decisions for any delays, cancellations or whatever, as early in the day as I possibly can. And and I continue to do that because I'm acutely aware of that disruption and the methabout factor for the residents on the island. So decisions will always be made as early as we possibly can. Before my time, I think they used to close the roads, and there was continuous 15-minute delays, and it would be, you know, be blowing a hoolie and there'd be driving rain and that, and you think, well, everybody knew it wasn't going to take place, so why close the roads? You know, so we would always keep the roads open, because that minimizes the disruption of the public. It stops the competitors hanging around on the start line wondering what's going on. It prevents marshals being stood on point, getting absolutely wet through for no reason at all. And if we keep the roads open, once it does stop raining or once the weather breaks, then the continuous traffic on the road will help dry the roads out faster. So for us, that's a bit of a win-win, really. But we've also, I've mentioned John Barton as the deputy clerk of the course. We also have Lizzie Klinvig. She's the other deputy clerk of the course. And part of Lizzie's remit is to liaise with residents on and around the TT course. So if any residents do have issues, whatever that may be, we are very quick and very proactive to engage with them and to help them out as much as we possibly can. I mean, let's face it, the TT's been going for 118 years. So, you know, it's not as though it's something that we've just generated. Obviously, people are well aware of it, but we are aware of that some people don't like motorbike racing, don't like the TT. But where we possibly can, we will do what we can to help them during the course of the fortnight.
On the course itself, of course, safety continues to be a matter that you have to deal with as well. There have been occasional incidents over the years of maybe people trespassing onto the course intentionally or unintentionally. You know, what can you do around safety around that side of things? And I suppose kind of continue to kind of bring home the message that by not following the rules, you really can be putting someone's or several people's lives at risk.
Absolutely. I mean, the simple message on that is guys, once the roads are closed, the roads are closed. It's that simple. You know, we've got marshals. We've got 500 and I think it's 563 marshals positioned around the TT course in line of sight. And you know, they will very, very quickly report into race control if anybody leaves the driveways or whatever and goes onto the course, or if any spectators try to walk along the path like they do in some other events. But the message is absolutely, for me, I can't think of any other message that is more crystal clear, really. If any driver of any vehicle or any pedestrian goes onto the TT course whilst roads are closed, they'll be breaking the law. It's as simple as that. They'll be breaking the law, and they will be subject to a heavy fine and or imprisonment. And it's that simple. Same with people who fly drones. You know, there's a thing, you know, we annually publicise the thing about flying drones. Now, unless that drone operator works to a green light, where we have designated positions around the course for green light to fly the drones, anybody caught flying drones at any part of the course, again, will be subject to a fine and or imprisonment. And those two points are non-negotiable. You know, driving or walking on the TT course during periods when the roads are closed, or flying drones is a jailable offence. It's as simple as that.
And the final subject, you've just mentioned them before, the marshals as well. Highly dedicated volunteers year after year from on and off the island that make sure the racing goes ahead. So just to wrap things up, a two-pronged question really. From your understanding, how are marshal numbers this year? And also, how are you making sure that marshals get the appropriate time out there, that they don't feel used and abused in some cases?
Yeah, I mean, that's... So point number one, the marshal numbers. We're receiving... daily updated figures, and at the moment the figures are looking pretty good. There are still one or two areas which haven't achieved the minimum manning, but you know, that we're not talking big numbers really. So obviously we've got another week or so before people start arriving on the island, so there's still an opportunity for people to sign on online. But there are a fair number of marshals who don't like to sign online and like to come to the TTMA marquee in the grandstand and sign on and get all their packs and everything at the same time. So where we stand at the moment, I am very confident that we'll have no issues come May the 26th, because the numbers that are left to be filled will be filled during the next week and over that weekend prior to first practice. In terms of marshals being stuck out on post but being out on course for long periods of time, again, part of the rescheduling of the schedule, you know, part of the rewrite of the schedule was to reduce the race days, so that obviously we reduce the rider fatigue, as I mentioned earlier. So we're trying to minimise rider fatigue, but also, you know, not just the marshals, but for all officials involved, because, you know, our jobs don't just start when the roads close at 10 o'clock and the roads open at say 5 o'clock. You know, we are on the go, say from 6:30 in the morning till probably 7 or 8 o'clock at night. You know, in the worst case scenarios. So we've reduced the program, to continue to provide that content, the scheduled content for the spectators, but equally trying to reduce the program so that marshals and officials aren't working all hours and God sends, and they can enjoy other parts of the island whilst they're on the Isle of Man.
Thank you for having the stamina to make it to the end of the Manx Radio Sportscast. You're clearly someone who has their eye on the ball at all times. Want to hear more about the latest sporting news across the Isle of Man and much more? Then might I recommend you take the plunge and subscribe to this series or a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so that, in a flash, all of our finest moments take a winner's place on your smartphone. Thank you.